is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Nothing sets off a yard like mature trees. Trees can frame a house, cool it from the summer sun, hold the soil, provide brilliant color in the spring and fall, and collectively improve air quality. But selecting the right trees for a given yard and knowing how to care for them in the face of climate change and attacks from various pests is important to protect what is a multi-generational investment. To talk about the care of trees in this region, we are joined today by the Manager of Events and Outreach for Carriage House Farm, Kate Cook, the Community Garden Manager for Turner Farm, Joshua Jones, a frequent guest here, and Vice President of Madison Tree Care and Landscaping Services, John Butcher. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everyone, to Cincinnati Edition. Josh, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. How would you and John, let's start with you. You're the tree. You're the real tree guy. You're up in the trees all the time. How would you evaluate where we stand this summer in terms of the amount of rain we've gotten, the spacing that we've gotten? Are trees under stress right now? I mean, we just had a few days of rain, but where do we stand and what should people be concerned or not concerned about?
I think that drought stress is probably one of the biggest concerns. The rain the last few days helped, but the period before that was really hot. Trees are using a lot more water than normal. You'll see a lot of early leaf drop when it gets really hot, and long, slow watering is the best way to counteract that over a long period of time.
If you have a relatively large tree, what's the best way? Okay, long, slow watering. But where do you water it? I mean, especially a mature tree that, you know, I know with smaller trees, you sort of do it at the edge of where the branches come out. But what if you got a big tree?
So we call that the drip line, and that's the same whether it's a big tree or a small tree. Your most effective watering is going to be in the drip line because that's where you'll find the vast majority of the roots to take advantage of the water that you put down.
Now, in the garden, we like to water early morning or, you know, before sunrise. Is that the same for trees? Is that the best time?
I think you can reduce a lot of fungal problems when you water earlier in the day, somewhere between, I don't know, 5 and 9 or 10 o'clock before the sun really comes out. And then the sun comes out and can dry up the water. But you really shouldn't be watering the foliage when you're watering your tree anyway. You should find a method that keeps the water on the ground.
It's really the roots that have to be operative here. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, watering the foliage, you may get a little intake on some species, but for the most part, you really just want to focus on the roots. The less water on the leaves, the better.
Kate, what if somebody's had a tree that was planted last fall or maybe planted this spring? It's a young tree. Mm-hmm. We've got, as John was saying, some drought issues here. What are the concerns, and can you be concerned about overwatering?
Oh, absolutely. And that's where, you know, especially if you're the person who put the tree in, to know what quality of soil you're putting it into. Here in Cincinnati, we tend to have a lot of those dense clay soils that aren't terribly good for water penetration or for it to dry after large rain events. And so we're kind of caught in the middle.
There.
Yeah, it does. Now, a mature tree has worked its way through that dense material, and so it's not as much of a problem. But with a young tree, I would say if you can, when you put it in, give it some amendment to help break up that soil, either be it compost or peat or something else that'll help to move moisture along. And then during dry conditions, I would say a regular watering schedule too, to be consistent so that that tree isn't going into periods of stress if it doesn't have to. Okay. And so I know that with some of the woodier herbs and things that we grow, we try to do that at least twice a week during hot, dry conditions.
What about a Turner Farm? I mean, how do you what trees are you dealing with? Is it fruit trees?
So we have a myriad of trees at Turner Farm, everything from pawpaw to persimmons to I think we have some hazelnuts, some cherries. Most of our trees are all mature. We mulch them nice and heavily. That way we retain the moisture when it does get moisture. But we don't irrigate a lot of our trees. We kind of take a more hands-off approach. Now, if a tree, you know, with these last few weeks, no rain, 90-degree days, I think they were probably irrigated here and there. But with established mature trees, it's not that big of a deal to go in and irrigate as much as it would be a young tree because their root systems are so vast. And since we have that clay soil, they're pulling every little bit of moisture out of that clay that they can. Now, I went through and planted a lot of fig trees this year. I propagated about 50 fig trees. We finally have hardy figs that are hardy in our zone, so we're taking advantage of planting those. And the first one that I did, I always like to tell people, you have to dig your hole 2 to 3 times the size of your root ball. And the first one, I didn't do that, and it was in heavy clay, and it was when we were getting rain, and it basically just sat in a bathtub full of water.
Wet feet.
Oh. And you could tell immediately within like a week of planting it, it looked really bad. So I, you know, pulled the tree up, looked at what was going on. I widened out that hole that I dug and did exactly what Kate did, is amended it with some less clay material. I used compost because I had it on hand. But if you have peat, it's really inexpensive to go buy if you don't have it. And that tree bounced back, and I since then planted the other trees in that same method, and they're all doing really well.
John, you look like you wanted to jump in.
There are two notes. One, I was going to ask you to clarify when you said put down a bunch of mulch on the tree. Can you be a little more specific about that so we don't have people just dumping mulch on
Yes. So you want to make sure that you don't go above you basically I create a donut around, so I don't want the mulch up on the central stalk of the trunk of the I'm used to dealing with plants and not trees. So the central trunk, you don't want the mulch build up on that. Really bad for the tree. It creates something called girdling, which is not healthy for the tree. And I basically try to get it out to where that drip line is. That way the roots that are actively taking up the moisture are mulched so that water can seep down and it doesn't evaporate.
One of the terms that I'll throw out is the root flare is the area that we don't want to cover up. And that's where the trunk meets the ground. And you should see the trunk get just a little bit more broad right as it touches the ground. And if you see a tree where it looks like somebody just stuck a pencil into the ground, it's covered up with mulch or with dirt, or it was planted too deep. Something's going on that caused that to be covered up. And that's the most important thing to make sure is visible when we're talking about
trees. I see that very commonly, that twig in the ground, it's straight. You don't see that flare. I see that mistake made a lot of times. Well, so I just – go ahead.
No.
I just try to tell them that, that you haven't done anything wrong, but just pull that mulch away from the trunk of the tree.
Okay, we've got some callers, and I want to get to the callers and make sure that we get them in. Kathy, I think you have a question about a tree that you have in your yard that you're worried about.
Yeah, it's a blue spruce that's probably 35 years old, and it's getting real thin looking at the bottom. The bottom branches are dying off, and it has like a scaly gray stuff on the branches. I'm kind of concerned about it. Is that normal to have that scaly stuff on there?
John?
The scaly gray stuff I think you're referring to is most likely lichen, which is not harmful or beneficial to the tree. It's just kind of existing on the outside of the surface. When you have less rapid cell expansion or growth, you're going to have a little more accumulation of the lichen. What I think's probably going on with your blue spruce is what's happening all over the city and region. It's a huge problem right now, but it's Rhizospheria needle cast is the main culprit, and it's a fungal problem that's causing blue spruce to lose a bunch of their needles. Starts from the bottom and works up, oftentimes killing the tree in the end, but it may happen over a really long period of time.
Is there anything that we can do to combat that?
Preventative use of fungicides can be beneficial and helpful in that process. I think the main point I want to get across to people at this time is that we probably should be really careful about how many blue spruce we're installing. It's really a widespread, huge problem.
Does it spread to other members of the spruce family?
I've seen it on Norways, but blues are much more susceptible than the other spruce species.
I see.
Will it ultimately kill the tree?
It can, absolutely.
Okay.
Usually it makes them just look so bad that you don't want to keep them anymore before it actually kills the tree.
So when you are talking about the fungicide, you know, in the gardens we would use some sort of copper. Would you do a foliar spray or would it be more systemic?
This is typically a foliar spray.
Okay.
I always caution people to be really selective about what's worth treating with a foliar fungicide because there's other potential environmental impacts that you need to consider. And I don't want to just recklessly say everybody should start spraying their blue spruce. I think this is where if the tree's dying or going in the wrong direction, sometimes it's let it go. And when it doesn't look good enough anymore, remove it and replace it with something that's not so susceptible to common diseases.
You know, one of the questions that I think we, I'm not sure if it was a caller or what, but on the, you know, older trees, mature trees, sometimes you see that ivy has started to grow up on the trunk of the tree. Is that a problem? Is that a concern? Should it be removed? Or is it just like the lichen and it's probably not going to bother it too much?
I personally don't like it. I think that there's lots of potential bads and not a lot of potential goods. There's some school of thought out there where people say they're made to grow together and its vines can grow with the trees. But the English ivy and the winter creeper euonymus are the two main culprits we find in Cincinnati, and they grow faster than the tree. So what ends up happening is they can end up growing out on and extending out on the limbs and taking photosynthesis away from what would normally happen in the tree. They can add extra weight to the limbs and wind resistance, which in storms can potentially cause more failures. I think it's better not to have the ivy on the tree.
So just pull it up, get it out of there.
Yeah, and it can be a really laborsome process if the entire tree's covered. I've personally spent over a day with an entire crew of other arborists in a tree pulling the ivy off, and it's not an easy thing if you want to take it all off. I think for most people, the more practical application is to sever the vine completely all the way around the base without cutting into the trunk, and make sure you take out at least a couple inch chunk to separate because the ivy vine can reconnect somehow and it seems to stay alive unless you get 100% of it.
Pernicious stuff, isn't it? Now, do you find that the trees that really have a lot of coverage of these vines, does the vine canopy provide like habitat for insect pests also? I mean, is it something where it could be, you know, harboring more evil for the tree, or is it benign in that regard?
I think there's a potential for that. I've not seen a bunch of it. One of my bigger concerns is that you can't evaluate the structure of the tree when it's covered in ivy. So if there's a poor crotch attachment or an old wound that's not closing over well, you can't see it.
Yeah.
So something could be going on.
Yeah.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Because trees mature over decades or even centuries, they are the biggest and most important investments homeowners can make in their yards. Choices any one owner makes about their trees will affect owners 30, 40, 50 years in the future. To help us think clearly about caring for the trees we have, we are joined today by Kate Cook of Carriage House Farm, Joshua Jones of Turner Farm, and John Butcher, the Vice President of Madison Tree Tree Care and Landscaping. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. I want to get right away to a call, a caller who has called in. Carrie has a call about a tree that he's concerned about. Carrie, what's your observation?
Hi, I've got a Witcher King hawthorn tree. We planted it about 12 years ago. I'm not sure how old it was at the time. It was about 5 feet tall. It's about 15 tall now. And this spring, it started to leaf out just like all the other trees, and then it just stopped. The leaves probably were about half an inch to three-quarters of an inch long and just stopped. And they remained supple. and they're still in that state now, although I think they are getting less supple now. We're wondering what happened and if there's anything we can do to save it.
Are you saying that the leaves are still green and they just haven't expanded any further?
Correct.
Okay.
I would guess a root issue of some sort,
yeah,
whether it's a girdling root or root rot, but it doesn't sound like our typical diseases that we get with the Rosaceae family. It doesn't sound like fire blight. It doesn't sound like apple scab.
Where, I mean, this could be a perfect example of the mulch, which I see very commonly. Is your mulch on your tree trunk? Do you have it mulched, I guess would be a good question.
Well, there is mulch. It's just leaf mulch. And no, I don't have it too high.
Okay.
It has, for the last several years, we've been fighting a horrible invasion of mugwort. I don't know what the scientific name is for that weed. I've been trying to dig the roots out by hand, and that is around the base of the hawthorn. But I've tried very hard not to disturb the roots any more than necessary. But that area has had leaf mulch for years, but it's not high on the trunk.
Hmm.
Have you used any herbicides to treat the weeds under the tree?
No. Just this year, within the last couple weeks, we started to, but not near the tree, but not close to the trunk, at least. We're still probably 10 feet away. We did start using Roundup, and we were painting it on the leaves of the mugwort, not spraying it indiscriminately, but that's the first time we've used any kind of herbicide.
Sometimes it's not so apparent that the tree's not growing as fast or as well as you want, and you can actually go back to the new growth, and you can see a little scar or interruption in the regular growth, and you'll see several concentric circles around the stem, and that will represent from that point out to the tip this year's growth. And you can trace that back usually 4 or 5 years. And I would bet that if we looked at that tree, we'd find that it's probably been slowing down over a period of time. And this year, it's a little more apparent, and maybe it's not as acute as what you think, and it's just showing up a little more this year.
So it sounds like a tree that needs to be watched and maybe some advice.
Absolutely.
Calling somebody in to give some advice.
It's hard to diagnose those things without seeing the actual tree itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Carrie, I want to thank you for calling, and I think we need to go on. There's been a couple of calls that have come in, and people haven't stayed on the line, but they want follow-ups. Joshua, what's the name of the hardy fig tree that you mentioned?
So there are a few of them. The ones that we've had most success with over the past few years is the Chicago hardy. They call it the Chicago hardy because it is supposedly hardy all the way up to the zone that is Chicago, which I think is like 9, and we're at 6A. It should take a really cold winter. Now, that being said, we do use some precaution over winter. If it's a multi-year old tree and it has nice woody parts to it, you can do a couple of things with figs. You can cut them down to their base every year if you wanted to, and that'll create essentially one nice fall fruit for you. If you do have woody growth, you can leave it over the winter and you'll get two harvests. You'll get a spring harvest from the woody growth, and then the new growth will create a fall harvest. So two harvests are always better than one. So in order to get that, we will kind of prune the fig, the woody parts of the fig, into a cylinder. We'll wrap it with essentially a big cage around it, and we'll stuff leaves inside that cage, and it basically gives it a big winter coat, and that just allows it to insulate. If we get really cold, we can protect some of that old growth. That being said, this past year, actually, we've had a few of our old growth figs. Actually, they died, all their old growth died, so we had to cut them down to the roots, and they regrew. The roots are still surviving, so we're going to get a fall crop off of those. But the Chicago hardy we've had really good success with. Now, if you have the opportunity, I always recommend putting it on the south side of a building, Because what's going to happen is you're going to create a little microclimate. That building, that wall is going to absorb heat from the sun and keep it warm. So picking the right plant and the right and putting it in the right place is very important. And I think that's a easy piece of advice I can give future fig growers.
Do you do any figs at
Carriage? We're actually propagating quite a few figs at Carriage House also. And being mindful of where you're putting it to really maximize the heat during the cold months is really important. Like, for example, we've put some where our like septic reservoirs are, because that will stay a few degrees warmer than surrounding area.
Sometimes that's all it needs.
And sometimes that's all it needs. And I was also going to mention, you know, you're talking about these winter protections. Protecting that root base is just as important as protecting the woody growth above the ground too. So if you are going to go through the trouble to really, you know, do it for your plant, that would be the opportunity to do maybe a compost mulch before you would put your leaves in on top. And again, a little bit of extra protection from lower temperatures and wind, especially.
Okay.
And that's one, the one thing I love about growing figs is they propagate very easily. So you can buy one fig and in 4 years you can have figs everywhere. I love it.
Your neighbors will love you.
Yes.
Yes.
And the squirrels.
Yes.
As long as you like figs. Now, a quick question back to the very beginning. What about your thoughts on tree watering systems that claim to feed water directly to the roots? I'm not quite sure what that means. I haven't seen those.
Fertigation for trees?
I've seen them. Yeah. Actually, saw one on Shark Tank, and it was a really great idea. But you've probably seen more than I have, John, so I'll let you go into this one.
I think that when we get into severe drought periods, any way you can water your tree is better than not watering at all.
Yeah.
The systems that push into the ground are getting through the top layer of what's normally going to shed a lot of water off until it gets loosened up with a little bit of rain. So you may be a little more efficient with the water getting it in. And those usually take a lot more energy and a lot more time. And I'm a huge fan of a sprinkler or a soaker hose, and you turn it on at a fairly low rate and you run it for a really long period of time and saturate the soil. It may
long take, period of time.
It may take 4 or 5 hours that you want the overhead sprinkler in one particular spot. And you'll know because you'll go out and poke a screwdriver or a garden trowel into the ground. And most of the time when you think you're done, you'll find that you've scratched about the top inch of soil and it hasn't gotten much deeper than that.
Then we in the garden, we do drip irrigation, which is essentially the same thing as a soaker hose. It puts water directly where the plants need it. So with the overhead irrigation, you're getting evaporation and things. So I really recommend the soaker hose for trees. It's going to save you water cost versus just kind of broadcasting it overhead and getting it, you know,
where you lose a lot to evaporation.
Exactly.
Too,
so soaker hose at the right time, you can be really efficient with your water. And obviously water is a precious resource. We want to try to save as much of it as we can.
And there are nice, like the sweat style soaker hoses that you can get. And if you have a number of trees that you want to take care of all at once, you know, you can just kind of wind it around and leave the hose there and just run it when you need to. It can be pretty low-key the rest of the time.
Okay, I want to move on to another caller, and Dale has a call about a particular tree and a condition that's happening with that tree. Dale?
Yes, I have an old hackberry tree, pretty big tree, and recently I discovered a pile of sawdust at the base of the trunk and a bit of a pocket carved out of the trunk. I'm not sure if it's carpenter ants or termites or what kind of insect would do that, but I'm trying to figure out what to do to save the tree. Get rid of the pest and save the tree.
Well, oftentimes, ants aren't really the problem. They may be a symptom that you see as they're going into the decayed matter of the tree and they're harvesting that, but they're not actually eating the live portion of the tree. So you may not actually need to take care of a pest problem, but I would highly recommend that you get someone at least with the minimum credential of a International Society of Arboriculture certified arborist to inspect that tree, because there could be bigger issues that could cause the whole tree to fail that are not really related to keeping the tree alive or not. And this sounds like one that you probably should have somebody look at.
Okay. So it's a sign that something's going on, but it may not be the insects.
You have decay of some sort, most likely, and you have something feeding on the decay, but how big it is, what effect it has on the total structure, stability of the tree, it's impossible for us to measure that over the phone.
Okay. Which raises other insect infestations that have been occurring. Where do we stand with the elm borer? And I know that's been sweeping the United States, particularly the eastern and United States. It's reached into the south a little bit, but where are we in this area with that? A lot of elm trees have been removed. Are we on top of it?
Well, so there's two issues here, and I'm a little confused. So there's the
– No, I'm confused. You're not confused.
This is the woolly aphid for the elm, correct?
Well, so the elms have Dutch elm disease still happening.
Oh, okay.
And that would be the elm bark beetle is the bug that spreads that around. But the emerald ash borer, I think, is the more relevant subject that you're inquiring about.
Answer the question that's more important, even though I didn't ask it.
So the emerald ash borer has wiped out the vast majority of ash trees in our area, and it's still active and it's still happening. A lot of people started treating their trees early on, and there are a really good number of healthy ash trees that are protected somewhat. I would continue the treatments for those that have. Some trees that haven't been treated at all are somehow magically missed by the borer to this point. I saw one this morning in Clifton that hasn't been treated and it's still really green, and I just think in nature, everything doesn't always happen the way you think it should.
Isolation, I think, helps them too, because there's just one single tree and there's not, you know, a forest of ash where these things can feed on. Right. So there's one in a park in Over the Rhine that's by itself and it's gloriously beautiful and hasn't been treated. So I think isolation helps them out, but I would still treat it if you haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still a good idea if you want to keep the tree to have some treatment mechanism in place. But the vast majority of ash trees are dying or dead. There's still a bunch of standing dead ones around the city posing great risk to parks and people and roads that need to be dealt with.
Well, there's a lot of those trees that are being systematically removed. I see it on golf courses and things where they've gone in, they've marked the trees, they're taking them down. What can happen with that wood? Is that wood, can it become firewood, or does that have to be disposed of some other way?
It actually makes really good firewood. The issue is you can't take it out of a quarantined area into an unquarantined area because they don't want to spread it. But basically, anywhere close to us that I would know to go is all in the quarantined area. So there's not a lot of restriction immediately on where you can take the wood to or not. But I would generally say the less movement, the better with any firewood products.
What about the stump that's left? Does that have to be ground out?
No.
No.
There's no particular reason. The bug is so rampant that where it's at, by you removing every shred of debris isn't protecting the tree next to it any more than leaving it.
The bug's probably already there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it is what it is, and you just, move on.
Right.
So so that's the ash tree borer. Is that the biggest single pest that we're facing right now?
What about the longhorn beetle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the longhorn beetle is, in fact, much bigger than the emerald ash borer in size, but its impact thus far to our trees has been a lot smaller only because efforts to quarantine it have been really, really strong. And I have to give some credit to the government and people on the front end that isolated this area, and they started really aggressively quarantining the trees and removing. And there are a lot of people that were unhappy that trees were removed. And it's really frustrating when your neighbor has a bug problem and someone comes in and tells you you need to remove your tree. But thus far, we've not found very much at all outside of the original quarantined area. And it's, I think it was 2011 that it was first noticed in Bethel, Tate Township, somewhere out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's not somewhere else, but it's not been found anywhere else to this point.
Okay. Before we take a break, we've got a caller that I want to get in. Very specific question. And John, what's the question that you have?
Well, I got these three Norway spruces in my backyard, and they're beautiful trees. Each one, they're about 12 years old, and they're just gorgeous trees. I love to watch the new growth in the spring. You know, they get those bright tips on them. But the one tree has these, like, lots of little small holes, like, I don't know, like maybe an eighth inch in diameter, and the trunk of the tree has got just sap all over it, but yet it's still very healthy looking. I mean, it looks great, but I just didn't know if this was going to be a problem long term. The other two trees aren't showing any sap at all, but this one is just got sap all over it, and it looks great though. That's my question.
Are the holes in a concentric circle around the trunk, where it's a straight line that goes around the trunk, and there's maybe an inch apart up and down the trunk? The rings of
pretty much. Yeah, exactly.
So that's a sap sucker woodpecker that's doing that, and they're not going after a bug per se. A lot of times, you can put like an aluminum pie pan or something shiny and reflective or noisy to try to scare them away. Maybe a tree wrap, which is a paper product that you can wrap around the tree in those particular spots if the tree's not too big. But you kind of just have to deal with this a little bit.
A dog.
A dog. Stop feeding your cat.
Let's not get into that. Okay. We're taking care of the sapsuckers now. With time for a short break. But all three of my guests will be back to answer your questions about caring for your trees in your yard and also thinking about what you might want to plant in the future. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Caring for trees that we have is essential, but what about when it's time to plant a new tree? Which tree should be considered? Which tree should be avoided? To explore those and questions you that have, and there's lots of them, I am joined today by three experts: John Butcher, who is the Vice President of Madison Tree Care and Landscaping; Joshua Jones, who is a Community Garden Manager for Turner Farm; and Kate Cook, the Outreach Manager for Carriage House Farm. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100, email us at talk@wvxu.org, or we're on Facebook and Twitter. So on this question, sort of moving into it, not just the trees we have, but the trees we might want to have, there was a call a little while ago. Jason has 2 acres with fruit trees, but wants suggestions on a nice border trees, full sun. Okay. Kate?
I think it depends on a bit what kind of fruit you're growing. And border trees, just to make the property look nice, to actually protect your fruit trees from other things, I think there's a lot of questions there.
And what the soil is.
And what the soil is.
Like, is it wet? Is it dry?
Yeah.
I instantaneously think pawpaw for a border tree. I think it's
That'd be lovely.
A great border tree. The fruit is amazing. It is an understory tree typically, but they fruit best in full sun.
They flourish. So
I don't like to put them out, you know, on an island essentially by themselves, but being on that border of, on a wood line going into a field, I think they do really, really well there.
A spice bush might be really nice too, because, you know, again, it's an understory plant, but it's a native, so you know it's going to be hardy and virtually pest-free. They're beautiful, and you can't really call it a tree. It's a woody shrub, but they can get tree size, and they get pretty big when they get lots of sun.
Okay. So the point is, lots of possibilities. It just depends on the actual situation. I'm not sure this is the same Jason or a different Jason. Wants to know if he would have luck planting seed pods from sycamore trees.
I've never tried.
I think my dad had success in getting some seedlings off of that. And he was infamous for, you know, planting stick forests wherever we would live. And I believe he got a couple of sycamores.
Stick forests. Is this a technical term that I don't know?
It's called, I have this tiny tree and I'm going to put it in the yard and it will become a big tree someday. But he had some success with sycamore. I know he had cypress that he got going from some seed that he found somewhere, but it can really be labor intensive because sometimes these seeds need to be stratified, which means they need a cold period before they'll germinate. So I would recommend doing some reading on it and seeing if you have the time to dedicate to it.
You know, looking ahead, oh, I'm sorry, John, did you have?
No, there's just lots of already known research that says how long you want a specific seed to be cold and what kind of environment it needs. Michael Durr, the Woody Manual, is like one particular book that I use regularly to find out what it takes to propagate any particular seed.
That's like the Bible for tree propagation, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about trees that people might want to plant or might want to avoid. And I want to lead with the Bradford pear question, not just because of the Bradford pears themselves, because there was a big push to have white flowering trees in this region, 15 years ago. And now what we see is trees, as I understand it, they've just gone wild.
So I actually did my research at UC on this exact topic was – what they're finding is a Bradford can't mate with a Bradford, but a Bradford can mate with an Aristocrat, which they're both the same calorie pair. They're just different varietals. And what we're seeing is what they call an F1 hybrid. And those F1 hybrids are popping up, you know, and they're out competing other trees. I don't think they're quite labeled as invasive, but they're pretty close to it. And I think that we're kind of going away from planting those now. I really don't see, you know, the fruit is not edible. It gets all over your car. It gets on your sidewalks. I just think it's beautiful for a couple of weeks. But then after that, I don't really see the allure to it. I think there are other trees that would survive in our area that could do much better.
I have actually seen proposals that the only – the proper – response to the situation we're in now is to literally begin eliminating all these trees.
I say cut them all down. And people might not agree with me on that, but that is one tree that I would say cut it down and replace it with something else.
I would have a hard time arguing with that stance. If you do have a small property and you only have one tree and it's substantial and it's providing shade, I think that's a really tough call to make.
Right.
And taking a little energy to preserve that one for a while and getting a backup plan, maybe planting a new tree in its place so that you can take it out at some point in the near future is a reasonable suggestion. I think asking everyone, as much as I would like to, take down every pear tree that's there is probably not going to happen. And if we could find a way to meet in the middle.
Yeah, I understand that I'm in the small minority here.
Well, I agree with you. I think that we'd be better out without pear
trees. Another part of the minority is right there.
Yes.
So, agreed. Kate, are you part of the minority? Or are you,
I can't stand those Bradford pears. We actually had one in the garden at Carriage House that we cut it off and then grafted a bunch of other pear wood to it, and I believe half of them took. So now we have what is left of a Bradford pear growing other fruit tree.
That's
material,
a good thing you can do with it. Yeah. You don't have to just cut your Bradford pear off. You can grab something else onto it.
All right.
Can I make a clarification?
Sure,
on
John.
It? So Joshua brought it up a little bit, but it's not just the Bradford pear. It's all calorie pears
all
that
the
are
calories,
the issue.
Right.
So Aristocrats, Chanticleers, Cleveland
Red,
Selects.
Red Blaze.
There's a bunch of different cultivars, but basically if it's a calorie pear, Pyrus caloriana, it's going to have the same problem that we're discussing. Maybe slightly better structure, but same invasive properties.
Okay. So this one definitely needs at least a PR person. A caller, Mike, has called in. And Mike, you have a question.
Yes. I have a plus 100-year-old elm tree in my front yard. And recently, just this spring, it kind of wise off. And one of the massive trunks, which is probably be a quarter of the tree, is dying. I had an arborist say that it looks like it's the elm disease, but is there a way to know for sure? I don't want to cut this tree down if I can preserve it.
Well, certainly that symptom is very typical of Dutch elm disease when you have a large portion of the tree die out at once. But you can take a sample off of that dying section and send it to various different labs to be analyzed. And if whoever your tree care professional is should have avenues to do that.
Now, do they do that at the extension offices the same way that we can get soil samples done in the garden arena? Can you do the tree samples through Hamilton County or whatever county you're in's extension office?
I think that it's a little bit bigger than that. And the extension that I send it to is up in Columbus at Ohio State. UK also has one in Kentucky that you can send them to. But I don't think they have that regional lab set up to really diagnose all of these things.
So gotcha. State versus county extension.
Gotcha. Seems like, and the Dutch elm testing costs a little bit more than some of the traditional testing because they've got to culture it. It just takes a little bit more energy to get that answer.
Okay. Claire called in and asked, she has very large trees, one over 100 years old. How does she find a qualified arborist to take care of them? This seems like a softball for Madison Tree Care and Landscaping, but John?
Yeah, well, I certainly would love to have the call and to be able to help them out and look at their tree, and that's absolutely what we do. There are other good tree services in the area that can help as well. I tend to think that we're the best, but we're not the only one in the area. And of course, I'm biased, but you want to at least make sure you've got an ISA certified arborist would be the absolute minimum criteria. International Society of Arboriculture.
Okay.
And they have a credentialing program called a certified arborist, which is an entry level credential into being a real arborist. But there are lots of other qualifications beyond that that may separate one person from another, but that would be the minimum you'd want to look for if somebody's looking at your tree.
Okay, I want to get Sandy in here. Sandy, you have a question about a tree that's dropping leaves, is that right?
Yes. We have a very mature willow tree in our backyard, and it is now kind of draping itself over our deck. It's dropping a lot of leaves, and a lot of those little fronds, or not fronds, or little stems that come off of the willows. Is there any, should it be trimmed? Would that help with this problem?
I mean, I know that willows love to have wet feet. They're a riparian type tree. They like to be on pond edges and things like that. And with this drought, that would be my instantaneous thought without seeing the tree specifically. But I think, you know, what do you think, John?
Willows have an amazing amount of problems associated with them. One of them is that they're really messy and they always drop stuff no matter what. But there's also 5 or 10 fairly common diseases, of which I don't know all of them, but there's a stem borer, there's a twig blight that you can see a little black lesion on the stem sometimes. They grow really fast, and that fast growth, I think, is just a little too bugs and insects and diseases like that new young soft tissue that's growing really fast. I think that's the reason they have as many problems as they do. But pruning is always something that the willows need because they grow so fast.
Okay. I want to get as many people in here as possible. We got a lot of people calling in. And Jeff, you have called in and have a question about a tree that you're a little bit concerned about.
Yes. We're within a mile of the epicenter of the Chinese beetle infestation, and I've gotten to know a lot of Department of Agricultural arborists, and we have a problem with about a 45-year-old dogwood tree that looked perfectly normal in the spring, but since then it's fallen on hard times. And it looks like it's not getting any water, but it's certainly not flourishing, and I'm concerned that. And there's one in my mother-in-law's yard in Ripley, Ohio. I was wondering if you have any other reports on dogwood distress.
Dogwoods are commonly susceptible to anthracnose, which is a fungal problem. Lots of fungal problems this year with all the rain and warm temperature and humidity. I can't say for sure that that's what your dogwood has, but that's one of the more common things that we see. It doesn't necessarily kill the tree, but a lot of times it'll stunt leaf growth. It'll cause twig defoliation on parts of the tree. Other potential is powdery mildew gets on native dogwoods. If you see a lot of white fuzz on the leaves, that could be the other potential here.
And now, is that something that is, you know, life-threatening to the tree? Is that something that's seasonal this year or what?
Anthracnose can be life-threatening. In particular with dogwoods, it's a little rougher on the dogwoods than other trees. And you really have to preventatively treat it to have any luck at all with the anthracnose. If it's powdery mildew, you can have some luck. Treating afterwards is actually the only way to treat it is afterwards. But usually that's not so that's not a fatal problem. That'll just go away with leaf drop.
Now, you can tell if it's anthracnose with the leaves will be sticky. Is that correct?
I don't know the answer to that.
I've had anthracnose on my calorie pear that I was doing my research, and the leaves were sticky because there was sap that was being pulled out of the leaves, and I always seem to find sticky leaves on anthracnose plants. But I guess don't quote me on that.
I learn something new every day.
Michelle, you have a question?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I would like a recommendation for a tree that likes wet feet that's not a willow and tolerates a bit of a breeze. I kind of have a high spot that runs next to a swale, but that it's not wet all the time, so it's not like by a pond, but it gets very wet in the spring, and I've lost two other trees that I've had there. So I'm just curious if there's something that tolerates that spring wet but can also maintain through the drier summer months.
Do you want like a large tree? Would you mind like a woody shrub that has fruit on it? Or do you have like anything like outcome specific that you're looking for?
Ideally, I'd like to have something that would provide shade.
I would go with a bald cypress would be my first choice for a wet area that grows big and can provide shade.
They're gorgeous trees as well. Yeah. I was thinking elderberry, but that won't provide shade.
Well,
I'm always thinking edible.
Right. And I was trying to think through like different nut trees too. But I think even with like filbert, they won't handle that spring wet as right. Well. Yeah.
And bald cypress are very low disease problems. They're native. They'll handle the dry soil as well as the wet. Should be a perfect fit for what you're looking for.
I know we still have some people on the line, but we're almost out of time. And I want somebody sent us an email before the show. I want to get this in. Someone from Clifton, he says, how do I get rid of chiggers in my garden without treating it with chemicals? I am an avid gardener, and I have the ugly scarred legs to prove it.
I guess the short answer is you really don't. What I recommend, and I do this, I get chiggers in my raspberry patches. Those are infamous for chiggers. Wear long johns when you're out there in the garden. I know it's hot, but that's the only thing that I can tell
you. And shower and scrub when you're done.
Yes.
That's the biggest thing, is that they actually take a little while to bury themselves into you. So when you're done outside, take a shower and scrub.
Okay. I want to thank all three of my guests, Kate Cook from Carriage House Farm, John Butcher from Madison Tree Service, and Joshua Jones from Turner Farm. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.